Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Jake, I wouldn't say it was a shocking reveal that Kevin Owens is the fifth man teaming with Drew, Sheamus, Butch, and Ridge Holland in War Games against the Bloodline, but that was the payoff at the end of the show after teasing that I might mention it earlier. It makes sense. KO's been off the radar a little bit, but has a history with Sami Zayn and with Roman Reigns. What do you think of the reveal? What do you think of the reveal and just kind of the way that they portrayed KO as kind of a badass? I didn't expect this to be the show where Reigns would be backing down for KO while Gunther was running scared, like a kind of chicken shit heel from Braun Strowman. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think – I mean, they don't need to be surprises or shocking to be successful, and I thought this was successful. You know, it paid off a couple of ongoing stories. Owens, you know, I think he had been away, you know, because of some nagging injuries, and thankfully he looked okay. Like, they didn't ask him to do too much in that closing segment, but he didn't look like he was hurting, obviously, or limping or anything, and so that was good to see. But I thought it was a very successful closing segment of the show. I mean, misremembering, but it almost felt like an Attitude Era closing segment to a show. It was just like a lot of star power being crammed into a very short period of time. And I think the live crowd responded well. It was clearly the best wrestling crowd of the week as far as weekly televised wrestling goes thus far. I haven't watched Rampage yet, obviously, but it came across well to me. And I thought, you know, in terms of cementing that War Games match, which had been, I think overall Survivor Series has been sort of weakly thrown together so far, this was the strongest segment that they put together so far.
Yeah, I don't think the feud between the Bloodline and the Brawling Brutes and Company feels War Games worthy. That's the problem with this, is it just, you know, the Usos were preoccupied with New Day. Reigns has not been preoccupied with Sheamus or Drew or KO for that matter. So unfortunately, this does feel like a calendar match. Well, we're doing the War Games concept, and they just didn't really have time, or there wasn't a natural flow to a feud that feels worthy of that stipulation, which I think waters down the stipulation. I mean, I get how WWE works. I know there's pros and cons to their calendar booking of events, you know, getting publicity out ahead of time, having annual traditions. But the idea of calling out War Games when it feels merited, and because a feud is really taking off, and as opposed to moving on from it, you want to settle it in the War Games, I like that format better. Or at least book a feud that feels like it needs a War Games setting to be settled. Adding KO to the mix, I like, and he has a history of some of the people in the ring, but it's not a history where it's like, oh my God, Kevin Owens is going to finally get his hands on the Bloodline in War Games. Like, there's not that kind of babyface pop where the fans are just elated by this because the babyface has a chance inside a cage to get his hands on the heels. And that's ideally what you're looking for here from that kind of reveal. That said, I still think it worked. I think they're making, late in the game, the best out of the situation that they have or that they put themselves into. And I think it'll be a hell of a War Game. So I think it'll be, you know, a really good match. There's such a mix of different personalities and talents. You know, Drew and KO and Butch are all very different wrestlers. We get to see Solo Sikoa in the biggest spotlight match he's had yet. So there's a lot to look forward to with it. And yeah, I think the crowd reacted well enough to, you know, raise up the anticipation for War Games a notch, but it still feels short of where I think historically War Games, as I remember, sometimes, you know, you remember things more fondly than they were in real time, but it feels like this isn't at the level of some of the NXT or Jim Crockett promotion War Games for that matter. Jake, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair criticism. They haven't spent a ton of time putting this match together, and obviously having only, what was it, 3 weeks between Crown Jewel and this show, put them on a very compressed timetable to put this together. And if they had, a better long-term storyline to pay off, you know, this certainly would have, increased my interest in the War Games match. But it just given the match on paper now that the lineup is completed, I mean, I'm definitely excited to see it. I think there's some incredibly talented people involved, and I think they did plant enough seeds between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns, when Owens a few months ago was trying to convince Sami to walk away from the dark side, so to speak, mm-hmm. and also targeting Roman Reigns and the unified world championships. He spoke about that in several promos. And so I think there's enough crumbs out there that you can kind of, put it together if you're a fan that watches the weekly TV. But, just in general, it was a successful segment and probably, more successful than most of what I saw on Dynamite this week. It was a well-executed segment in that regard, where I'm more excited about the Survivor Series match than I was a week ago. And I didn't feel that way, about a lot of the build for Full Gear on Wednesday night. So I guess for comparison's sake, I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, fair enough. The addition of Drew McIntyre hanging out with Sheamus, they addressed that. They didn't just pretend, hey, these two haven't been feuding for years. And Sheamus revealed Drew was his best man at his wedding a few weeks ago. They've fought to the point of respect. If the best man at your wedding is somebody that you've been just fighting with for 2 years and now he's your best man, I don't know what that says about your depth chart of friends. Like, I can imagine earning someone's respect, but maybe not making them your best man if they had, been through what they had been through with each other over the past couple of years. But that aside, I thought it actually was kind of a cool moment. And
was it 2 years or 20 years? I thought said 20 years.
I'm just thinking about what the feud was reignited during the, Performance Center Thunderdome COVID era. But yes, I mean, they go back 20 years. There was a reference to something from 20 years ago. So between them, but just in terms of the recency aspect of it, like if they had feuded 16 years ago, big deal. They had plenty of time to make up and become best friends, but that's a pretty quick turnaround from the enemy you're trying to brutalize in the ring to stand next to me at my wedding. But like I said, that aside, I actually thought that was cool and created a little bit more of a bond. It, if they ever feud again, that'll come up. You were the best man at my wedding, but you still blah, blah, blah. So, what did you think of that?
I like the fact that they addressed it at least, that it was sort of the elephant in the room in terms of the only exposure people really have to Sheamus and Drew McIntyre on WWE TV in recent memory is them just having a series of matches where they absolutely beat the tar out of each other in front of nobody in the Performance Center. And so, yeah, it did seem a little awkward to leave it unaddressed because, that's the only point of reference that people have. So I'm glad they tried to connect the dots there, and I think they did a passable job of doing it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's pause and introduce ourselves, introduce the show, and then we'll get on to other topics from the show along with phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, November 18th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, including a 35 years and counting print newsletter, website that's been around since 1999. And I host lots of podcasts. I'm part of lots of podcasts, including The Fix with Todd Martin and Everything with Rich and Wade on the VIP side of things. Also tomorrow night after AEW's Full Gear pay-per-view, I'll be hosting a post-pay-per-view roundtable. So go VIP if you haven't, or if you let it lapse, this is a good time to come back with our roundtables coming up the next 2 weekends with Full Gear and also Survivor Series, now just over a week away. The other voice you hear on the program is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. Jake, good to have you back. Welcome.
Always a pleasure, Wade. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely, yeah. Tell people about what you do with ProWrestling.net, how they can read and listen to you.
Yeah, I do some live reviews of weekly television. Most of the time, I'm covering AEW Dynamite, but this week a schedule change pushed me to cover Friday SmackDown. And I also appear on the .NET Weekly podcast with Jason Powell for .NET members. And I also appear on pay-per-view audio reviews with Jason, including tomorrow night's post-pay-per-view review for Full Gear. So you can get information on all of that at pwmembership.net.
Very cool. Do you want to bother giving out a Twitter handle, or are you already migrating or just shutting down?
Yeah, it kind of feels like a last call on Twitter lately. But if you want to follow me there, it's at Barnett Jake with two T's.
Yeah, it's crazy times with what's going on with Twitter. I have to say I'm not completely shocked that Elon Musk could have done this. I think I'm somewhere on Tribal Social and Mastodon at Wade Keller, but I haven't figured out how to post to either place yet. And I know there'll probably be a place everybody goes if Twitter starts crashing or goes under. But we haven't quite figured out what that's going to be yet. I know there's some people looking at doing fresh startups too. It's just wild. Anyway, we're here to talk SmackDown. You can follow me on Twitter at the Wade Keller, by the way. and at least then you'll know where I end up if we do leave Twitter, unless it just shuts down without notice. But yeah, what a crazy couple of weeks. Cool. Yeah. So, invite anyone who's live streaming our show to join us right now in the conversation. You can call us 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1 on your keypad, that flags you on our switchboard, and we'll know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, cool. So let's get to it. I do want to bring up one other subject that I kind of put into some previous commentary, which was the way that Gunther reacted to Braun Strowman in the match with New Day and Braun against all three members of Imperium. I'm curious your take on their decision to have Gunther run scared from Braun twice, like leap out of the ring scared. I mean, maybe that's going to be his character. Maybe it'll work. But I don't remember him acting that way before. Now, he hasn't been in the ring with somebody like Braun in that circumstance. But to have Braun sort of brush off the killer chops and then Gunther running, it just – I feel like it took some of the mystique of Gunther just sort of went poof in front of my very eyes that I think had been protected up until now. And I just think Gunther has a much bigger upside than Braun, and I think – whether people remember that specifically, I think it's part of the early stage of defining who Gunther is, and I just consider that one of the bigger mistakes on this show. What do you think, Jake? Did that jump out to you at all?
Yeah, it did jump out as being pretty out of character for Gunther to run away from Braun, but I guess it's sort of the one piece of Gunther that we haven't seen yet. It's like, is there a force that could inspire fear in a guy who just seems completely unflappable? And Strowman is maybe the first guy he's been in the ring with who was, you know, visibly much bigger than he is. And so I guess maybe they thought, well, you know, it doesn't make sense to, you know, to have Gunther completely unfazed by someone of Strowman's size and strength, especially, you know, after what he's been doing on, you know, television lately to Omos and, you know, jobbers and everybody else who he's been tossing around, Otis included. And so I guess I didn't outright hate it, but I think it would have felt bigger if they would have had that, you know, stare down showdown type of thing rather than just blatantly, you know, running away like a scared child. I think that might have been just a tad too far. You know, once the chops stopped working and you know, Gunther's power didn't seem to faze Strowman, you know, seeing some fear on his face would have been fine, but just the outright running away was maybe a bit too far for me.
Yeah, yeah. Overall, what did you think of the way that they followed up on New Day coming up short against the Usos, pivoting to a feud with Imperium, teaming with Braun? I don't think it was a major segment other than the point I made about second-guessing the way Braun acted. But was this a good transition after last week's main event?
Yeah, I can't think of an opponent I would have rather seen them transition to. And so I think it works for me. Two very talented teams. And, you know, once Gunther is occupied with what I assume will be Braun coming out of that tournament. I look forward to seeing some just straight up tag matches between the two teams because I think they'll work well together. They showed some flashes of some pretty good chemistry in that brief six-man match in between all the hijinks with Gunther and Strowman. So I like the feud. I guess my first takeaway, you know, when Strowman was introduced is, man, I couldn't stop thinking I wish Big E was around because I think this would have felt a lot more fun to me personally.
Yeah, absolutely, and good point. Okay, let's take a call here. It's been a while since we heard from Kyle from Baltimore. So, Kyle, welcome to the show. Steer us towards the women's division. And by the way, happy. Are we saying happy holidays yet, or do we get to wait till next week? Anyway, hi, Kyle.
Hey. I called for because I've been kind of busy throughout my entire time, whatever, it's fine. But I wanted to talk about the whole, I guess, the War Games two matches in general, the build-up to them. It feels like, to me, the build-up to the women's is more interesting because, A, they've been, because of the Bianca and Bayley stuff, it's been more apparent pretty much since they announced War Games in general that was going to be that they're going to involve damage control in the Bloodline in some way. But I feel like the women have been more consistent in the build to it. And now that there's like one more spot on Bianca's team, now that it probably I'm assuming it's going to be Becky, and I would assume that's going to be who's going to be. And if not, that's a mistake. And with the men itself, it feels like they're just doing it because they're just doing it. It feels like to me the Bloodline randomly having a feud with Sheamus and the Brawling Brutes and then McIntyre feels kind of forced to me. And it's kind of been kind of fun to see, but it feels like all this has been kind of forced and this whole Kevin Owens is now part of it. All this feels like forced to me. So what do you think about this whole build to work is on the men's side, because sure, it'll be a fun match. I'm looking forward to both War Games matches, but I'm so more invested in the women's because they've been consistent for the last few months of Bianca and Bayley. So what do you think about that dynamic?
Sure, yeah. Jake, I'll throw to you in terms of the comparing the build as Kyle brings up to the men's War Games match versus the women's situation. Bianca, Bliss, Asuka, Mia Yim, and a mystery partner against Damage Control, along with the returning Nikki Cross and Rhea Ripley. Has that felt more organic and more War Games worthy? Have you liked that build better? Even if ultimately the men's match might feel bigger just because of the star power, or to each their own, build-wise and naturally ending up in a War Games setting, does it work better?
Well, I can't disagree with the idea of consistency. You know, they've been building towards they've been having an ongoing feud between Bianca and Bayley, you know, since SummerSlam. I can't say that I've been in love with the way that it's been executed on television, particularly, once it was obvious that Becky wasn't going to be back, you know, after SummerSlam, and they sort of inserted Alexa Bliss, and it's been, from my perspective, it hasn't been the hottest program, on television. But in terms of, you know, having a story to reflect on that's long-term and having some animosity that's been built up between, you know, a number of the women in the match, I think it's definitely, paying off a longer-term story. In terms of the execution of the build, it's kind of 50-50 for me. I'm actually more excited about the men's match just because of the, the quality of the talent that's in there and you know, what we have to look forward to in terms of in-ring quality. But it is what it is. If Becky gets added on Monday and they're able to cut a killer promo segment and get me more excited about the match, I might feel differently next week. But I think if I had to pick, you know, one of the two matches that I'm more excited about heading into the show, I think it's the men's match at this point.
Yeah. Yep. Kyle, back to you. You have further thoughts on that or any follow-up?
I think for me, I kind of have to agree that the women's bit has kind of flagged in some way, but it's like I look at the title on there as well. At least you have now. It seems like to me too that it's like I've been so down on Roman's title run. It feels like he's just been an afterthought since since he became champion this year, well, at least double champion, and it's been about Sami Zayn and Jey Uso. Pretty, to me, it feels like that's been the feud they've been going on back and forth about. So that's why I've been kind of so super down on this War Games match, because everything to me is like all forced, it's all those stuff, because like it doesn't. Feels like Roman Reigns is in the background, and it's not really about him anymore. It's about Sami Zayn and what people are invested in him and what he's doing. And that's kind of sure. That's what people may like. But what about Reigns? You know, I'm trying to think long term what he's going to be doing heading into WrestleMania next year. All this stuff being a double champion. So that's the other big issue I have with this as well. Because feels like that's why I feel like all this is forced. It's like it's just been about Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns, like in the back burner. So before I get to Shotzi and all that stuff, what do you think about that situation with that scenario that for the last few months, versus Sami got involved with the Bloodline, that Roman Reigns take a long backseat and has don't feel important even as the world champion? How do you feel about that aspect of it? Because this has been he's been an afterthought to me ever since Sami really joined.
Jake, what's your take on that?
You know, I think there's definitely valid complaints about, you know, the Roman Reigns unified championship run. You know, he hasn't had a lot of credible opponents. I guess credible is probably not the right term, but exciting opponents. You know, Big E's, you know, had a serious injury that took him out. Cody Rhodes had a serious injury that required surgery. Kevin Owens has been nursing, a knee injury for the past several weeks, so he's been unavailable. Randy Orton has been out long-term. Rey Mysterio is out. So there's been a number of major stars that WWE was setting up as big-time baby faces that could have challenged Roman that have just been unavailable. And so they've really had to improvise. And Sami Zayn being introduced into the Bloodline and that story, you know, sort of catching fire, honestly. It's been some of the most entertaining stuff on wrestling TV for months. And so I have a hard time complaining too loudly about that content. But I do understand why some would feel less than excited about, you know, the way that Roman Reigns has been defending his title and how, you know, there really haven't been any opponents that you felt like had a legitimate chance of dethroning him. And we're all sort of waiting for Godot, in a sense, of, you know, who is going to challenge him at WrestleMania and whether The Rock is going to be available and whether that dream match could potentially happen. And so, yeah, I it's hard for me to completely reject the idea that his title run has been less than it possibly could have been, but I think there's a lot of other circumstances in play, that have been working against him that were out of his control as well.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Kyle, back to you.
That's fair. I mean, with the whole Cody Rhodes injury, people always thought it was going to be him headed to SummerSlam. So, you know, that's the whole thing. But, you know, we'll see. I just have that thought that it's just been, I just feel like, yeah, again, like I said, the one that's going to be more interesting, at least for me, in terms of, I'd be more invested because I've been following the story for weeks or months pretty much. And then the match is just going to be just a great match. And so I'm just going to, both matches will be great. This is, I'm more invested in the women's, but anyway, I'll move on with, to Shotzi and Ronda. I think just Ronda in general as champion, and also that fact that the women's division on SmackDown is not all that great. It's not all that interesting compared to Raw. Raw has the more bigger stars. It's very jarring how much star power and a lot of women that I'm interested in, and Alexa and Mia and Bianca and Bayley and Damage Control and Rhea. There's a lot of top names on all them on pretty much in the War Games match. And then you look on SmackDown, you see this Ronda and Shayna, they're now a tag team, even though Ronda's no SmackDown was champion. She's treated with mini feud with Shotzi. It's like, and you know, they now brought Raquel, which who, as of right, is incredible, but the most realistic babyface to defeat Ronda Rousey in a credible match if she was booked right. So, I another way until Becky to come back to her to go to SmackDown to dethrone Ronda and have some star power in the babyface side for on SmackDown, because it's just so lacking on the women's division on SmackDown. So what do you think could change in this situation in the women's division? Had if you know in the next couple of in the next month heading into like next year for the Rumble, stuff like that, is should Becky come back now the second, because they need some depth in this women's division? That isn't just Ronda and Shayna defeating these mid-carders and that. And what do you think about that scenario?
Yeah, I've thought about that, Jake. You know, is this the right circumstance? If Becky's ready for her to come back, what other options are there? Last week they built it up as a pretty big deal. I don't think there's much on it tonight. Or was it Monday when they teased it a big deal, I guess. But anyway, so yeah, Jake, your thoughts on that scenario?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment of the SmackDown women's division. It's been a wreck, for a while now. You know, they have Liv Morgan currently going through a reboot after a relatively unsuccessful title run. I've never been particularly impressed with Ronda Rousey's, babyface work, and I think I'm starting to enjoy her as a heel a little bit more, but there's still some weird quirkiness about her that doesn't quite land with me. And on the babyface side of things, it's basically just Shotzi and Raquel at this point. You know, Natalia is, just recently had, I think, nasal surgery. Emma, already lost to Ronda and doesn't really feel like she fits in at the top of the division anyway. And then there's essentially nobody else. You know, without Sasha Banks, without Naomi, without Charlotte, without perhaps, a Becky shifting over to SmackDown if she's a target opponent for Ronda at WrestleMania, the show just lacks, a lot of babyface star power. And so I think that's the primary issue, and they're just fighting through and biding their time until they can bring back some of these women who are either hurt or, in the case of Sasha and Naomi, with a contract dispute. I guess Charlotte Flair has just been away on various things, whether it's getting married or just general time off or nursing injuries of her own. So they need star power. I don't know exactly what the perfect timing is for bringing all these folks back, but I imagine you'd want to have the majority of them back by the Rumble if possible.
Yeah. It feels more sparse than it has in a while. I'm sure they want – I mean, having Ronda around helps. Having Bayley back helps, not as much as maybe we anticipated. But I guess, at some point you want them to be able to build new stars and not rely on, the same core of four or five women who were big stars 5 years ago. So I don't know if the pipeline is as strong as we'd like. It doesn't feel like – there's just a group of women who are just ready to come up and make a big impact, and that's unfortunate. But, I think that they're getting more out of Shotzi than I think they were getting out of her. I agree with you. I mean, I think there's a certain ceiling to her. I'm a little bummed out about Shayna Baszler and she's not being, protected or built up. She's just sort of like the, gatekeeper for Ronda. And I know they, quote, protected her in losing tonight, but Shayna's not being presented as anything special, and maybe they think, that opportunity has passed, that she's been defying down too much, and she's in a better position than she had been. But it's a tough call. I mean, if you can't have everybody plowing through everybody else, you can't have too many people just winning squash matches and dominating, and they do want to build up Shotzi. So I guess I understand, but if they had a deeper roster, they could be doing more to protect Shayna. I just don't think, the way Shayna's being portrayed, I anticipate her being in the top mix again. I don't want to say forever, but certainly anytime soon. What have you thought, Jake, of the use of Shayna teaming up with Ronda? I think it's been good for Ronda. I think it's been good for Shayna, but they aren't building up Shayna where I think people are imagining someday her being a top opponent for Ronda, and that would be the ideal scenario.
Yeah, I mean, they do have only really a handful of female baby faces on SmackDown. And I mean, I don't know, how many of them, you can realistically, just continue to feed to Shayna to build her up. Maybe that would be a good use case for, you know, bringing up people from the NXT roster for, you know, just sort of one night appearances to, you know, to not, you know, that they could lose and gain some, you know, TV exposure and not just be the local jobber of sorts that gets choked out on TV. But the depth issue is I think the most serious one, because it's preventing them from making a lot of progress with characters that just don't have enough dance partners to build credibility with.
Yep. All right, Kyle, back to you.
And I was also thinking too that the I was also just thinking to myself in terms of incredible matches. See, this year our matches on SmackDown, really since Liv Morgan shifted to SmackDown, unfortunately hasn't been on that. I really thought that when once Liv Morgan was going to be the SmackDown was champion, that I just looked on paper itself when she was champion. She has the potential of matches. I thought she'll have a good match with Raquel, have a good match with Zia Leto, push her more. I just thought they'll push more these women who haven't met anything, because Liv was champion, they'll make every other woman matter, but I guess not. And now we're in this situation where no one else matters, but Ronda Rousey and now Shayna Baszler. Now I guess they're trying to do something with Raquel, which I've been saying for since she debuted, but it's just not been all that. I'm not all that invested. It's not that much star power that there is on Raw when it comes to credible women to have credible matches with Bianca Belair in comparison. So, but last thing I'll talk about is what was it? I'm trying to remember. I lost it. It was, what was it? Oh yeah, it was LA Knight and Bray Wyatt. That whole thing. Now, I've never been a Bray Wyatt fan, as you know that. And I've always been completely down on Wyatt. I kind of still am with my own camera about him, but ever since Extreme Rules he came back, I was watching him. He's been for weeks been talking about whatever, but this whole Uncle Howdy thing. I was like, okay, well, who are you going to be feuding with then? Because you can't just keep talking about Uncle Howdy. What are you doing, feuding with yourself? So it's like it was back only last year's launch. So kind of glad he's now going to be in a feud with someone. But and with it being, I'm not sure LNA is the right person, because you would think you would want to build him up since he recently became LNA Knight again, finally, and then that's called Maximum Male Miles or this Max Dupree stuff, which he killed that. But I don't know. I was watching, like, okay, well, I feel like they're kind of in a lose scenario, because I would think they want to build up LNA Knight and not feed him to Bray Wyatt, someone who people don't want to see lose, and I don't think he will, because in this state situation. So what do you think about this feud that's been going on between LA Knight and Wyatt the last few weeks with them? And is this a benefit for LA Knight for being a feud with Philly Gray Wyatt, or is it going to be a bad thing if he just loses to Wyatt, or will he be fine with a loss?
Yeah, all those thoughts have run through my mind, Jake. You know, is LA Knight, even in losing, going to be better off being the first opponent of the returned Bray Wyatt? Or, I mean, I guess some of it just remains to be seen. What's your take?
Yeah, I wouldn't be entirely against the idea of LA Knight getting a win on Bray Wyatt either. You know, and I don't say that like, oh, that, you know, that's you know, it's going to be a straight up, you know, match and LA Knight's going to outsmart Bray Wyatt. I think the story they're telling with Bray is that he's a deeply conflicted person who isn't sure who he is or who he wants to be, and looks into his past and just sees wreckage. And every week when he has these outbursts, and then has regrets, and then tries to suppress his worst impulses and try to be a better person, you know, he fails. And then he has to sort of hit the reset button the next week and try again and try to be better. And that's something that you could absolutely have a savvy, clever, perhaps overconfident LA Knight take advantage of. You know, is Bray going to have a moment of weakness where LA Knight can pick up a fluky win and they get to a second match kind of thing? And so I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that LA Knight is going to come out of that feud worse off than he went in. I don't think he's the eventual winner of the feud, but I think if you can use, you know, Bray Wyatt to show off, you know, some of the cleverness of LA Knight, I think it could work out. So I actually enjoyed the segment tonight. I thought it worked pretty well. And I'm looking forward to seeing where they go next. I guess the only thing that stuck out to me as being odd is, you know, Bray Wyatt kind of emerges from his Doctor Who TARDIS at his entrance and has the big dramatic lantern thing. And then he just immediately goes directly into, you know, this sort of psychological, you know, conflict of conscience. It seems very incongruent, so to speak, where like the entrance doesn't match the character that he's playing, and hopefully that'll get better over time. But it's one of those things where it's like it's very, you know, the music and the visuals, you know, convey a level of confidence that the character doesn't seem to have, and then he just sort of flips a switch and he's a man in crisis. And so I don't know if they can fix that necessarily, but it does strike me as a sort of an odd juxtaposition of presentation.
How much do you value LA Knight in this? You know, Kyle brings up, will he be sacrificed or damaged if Bray just kind of ultimately wins or plows through him? Do you value him enough where you would, you know, have a devise that scenario? It would make storyline and character sense, perhaps, for Bray to slip up and show compassion and have that cost him. How concerned are you or with how LA Knight is being protected in this? If you're Paul Levesque and looking at his upside,
I mean, I don't see LA Knight as being a world champion. It just the presentation doesn't scream, you know, top of the card, carrying the show, guy who's counted on to be the top merch seller and sell out the house. I just don't think he's going to be entrusted with that level of of commitment and responsibility. And so I think he could be protected in the sense that he doesn't get completely obliterated by Bray Wyatt. But I wouldn't worry about it too much if that's the direction they're going in. I think LA Knight is confident enough and good enough on the microphone that he could talk his way back into his next feud without too much of a problem. And so I wouldn't sweat it too much. He is, you know, a quality banter partner for Bray Wyatt. And I think they executed their segment well on this show. And in that respect, I think he's a very valuable player because he can make other characters better, you know, through his interactions with them. And that's, you know, almost as valuable as somebody who's on the top of the card, because he can help elevate people up from the bottom through the mid card up towards the top, if that's where they want to go with him.
Yeah. Kyle, appreciate the call. Good to hear from you again. Have a good weekend.
It is the same. Thanks for calling.
Yep, you bet. So Javier has laryngitis. I felt that coming on earlier in the week when he called up. He said it literally hurts to talk, but he did want to email and say his take is that Bray Wyatt did not take out LA Knight. Uncle Howdy did it to frame Bray Wyatt. Really, who framed Roger Rabbit? There's a bunny in this somewhere. Really good tension between LA Knight and Bray Wyatt there during their segment. And he says, say hi to Jake for me. So, hi, Jake.
Hi, Javier. Hope you feel better.
What do you think of that possibility?
Yeah, I guess I'm not entirely convinced that Uncle Howdy is a distinct person. You know, it's clearly, you know, Bray Wyatt is dealing with a serious, you know, whether you want to call it like a split personality or, you know, haunted by his old demons. You know, he's been presented as a potentially supernatural character in the past, you know, with his different aspects. And so I guess you could frame it that way. Like he's got some sort of multiple personality disorder where he's not even consciously aware of what his other personalities are doing, you know, like, and when he regains control, he's horrified by what he's done, that kind of, and that's all fine and well. It's just how well can you execute the explanation on television? And I think, you know, I have a bit more confidence in what, you know, in Bray Wyatt under Paul Levesque's creative direction than I did under Vince McMahon. And so I'm hopeful that they can execute it well, but I'm not utterly convinced that they'll do so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's really been effective in how he's talked, how he's carried himself, body language, facial expressions, the way he reacted to LA Knight hitting him when he was slapping him for the second time, when he offered peace through a handshake, and how that's, you know, eating him up inside, and he's fighting the urge to go back to who he used to be. I like that there isn't just platitudes and gibberish to this mystical character, but it's more grounded, and it has this backstory about what his expectations were, who he is supposed to be, how he's supposed to act, that fear was the definition of respect. And he's second-guessing all that. He's questioning all of that, and so he's trying to conduct himself in this run in WWE differently, but he's being tested so far. I think LA Knight's a really good opponent to start, because LA Knight hasn't been fully defined yet either. So he doesn't seem like he's not a threat to Bray, because Bray's LA Knight's relatively new on the scene and hasn't been just jobbed out. So I think it's a good first opponent. And LA Knight's so good on the mic and so good with his body language and facial expressions and timing that it's a good foe opposite of Bray. It's a good starter foe. I don't think, you know, we want them feuding all the way through WrestleMania unless somehow it just takes off unexpectedly. but I don't anticipate that being the case. Okay, let's go next to Jay in Michigan. Jay, good to hear from you again. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about SmackDown?
What's on my mind tonight, man? Just, I want to get to the last segment, man. And I had an opinion on how they should have done the War Games match, since I felt like it was really just, as Kyle alluded to, nice hearing from Kyle, man. I haven't heard from him in a while. But as Kyle alluded to, it just felt really thrown together and kind of like put into a space where, because we're having this pay-per-view, we got to have a match. So it feels forced. But I think one thing they should have done, although I love KO and I get the involvement, there is history there, I felt like it would have even been a bigger thing if they added Seth Rollins as the fifth member, just given the history between him and Roman. It's always unfinished business. It's always like on site between them. The rivalry is just not going to end. And also, you know, they've kind of like transitioned Rollins into somewhat of a babyface character. And then on top of all of that, you got the Shield 10-year anniversary. I think this was the 10 years of the debut, when they debuted 10 years ago at Survivor Series. So I just thought that it would have just been so perfect, man. So, like, what do you guys think about that?
Jake, what do you think?
I would have loved it if they didn't already seemingly have Seth Rollins in another match on Survivor Series already. I guess you could have put him on double duty, but it seems like he'll be busy defending the United States Championship. But I think that's a story that they absolutely should get back to, and it should be one of Roman's upcoming matches. Whether or not he has the unified championship at the time, I don't know, you know, what the ultimate plan is for him. But Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, I don't think we've seen anywhere near the last chapter of their story together. And so I'm looking forward to that match when they do circle back to it.
What do you think of Seth as a character right now, if we're going to stray a little bit from SmackDown proper specifically here? Is the character that he's playing effective as a lead top tier babyface opponent for Roman, or would it need, or would it behoove them to have him undergo a bit of a shift to something more grounded and less, because he's basically doing the same intentionally obnoxious bit he did when he was genuinely going for heel heat?
Yeah, I think they might need to tame it down a bit. You know, I think one of the qualities that I appreciate about baby faces is having confidence, but also a little bit of humility. And it doesn't seem like Seth Rollins, the way that he's portrayed currently, possesses any at all. You know, he's still the same obnoxious, cackling, dancing, person that he was as he was at the peak of his heel run. And so, yeah, there'll probably need to be some shifts and changes and tweaks to body language. But I think, it's probably a good idea to find a median between where he is now and his previous babyface characters, which just weren't particularly effective. And so, it's one of those things where it's like, I'd like to see some changes, but I need more time to think about exactly what I want them to be.
Yeah. All right, Jay, any follow-up or another topic?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the main reasons why I said that outside of the reasons I gave was that, again, like, I don't think that you have to do much in order to, like, just make Rollins and Roman feel important. And I disagree strongly, Jake. Like, if Rollins and Roman is going to clash, it can't not be for the titles. So, you know, he has to be champion whenever they clash again, and he will, because there's no end of this thing in sight. So, man, I just thought that would have been a hell of a moment under all the circumstances. And I think that we're transitioning stuff to babyface. I mean, I don't think that he should lose a lot of this stuff that got him over. I just think it should be like a smart transition, because like you said, man, the mother babyface runs kind of like hit the wall. So I think that they're transitioning him in a more natural, believable way. But, you know, outside of that, man, I think that we're going to eventually, you know, we're going to kind of use this match to, you know, further when we get to, because it's almost like the KO-Sammy dynamic is pretty much bigger than whatever is going on with Roman, you know, in this match. So I definitely think we're going to get something Sammy related to, you know, further along whatever they got coming up. I mean, ultimately, I think that we get Sammy and KO taking the titles off the Usos, but, you know, that's down the road, man. I don't really have anything else to add, man, because I just kind of seen like the back half of SmackDown, but I did want to throw my opinion or idea out there and kind of just get a feel for what you guys thought about that. Maybe some of the other callers might, you know, have opinions as well. So that's all I got, boys. Thanks for having me tonight, and you guys take care.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. Jake, anything you want to add to that?
No, I mean, I think he's right in the sense that, you know, Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns would be an excellent unified championship match. And if they're, you know, if what I assume is, you know, is their dream idea of The Rock and Roman at WrestleMania, if that doesn't pan out, then I think Seth would be an excellent opponent if they could spend, you know, 6 to 8 weeks really, you know, putting that match together. You know, it'll still be it won't be the 10th anniversary of the Shield anymore, but, you know, they still have plenty of history that they could dive into. And their last, you know, match together for the, you know, at the time it was the Universal Championship was sort of inconclusive. And so they still have a lot of mileage left to go there.
Yeah, Cole did mention it was a 10-year anniversary to the night of the Shield debuting on TV. They won't be talking about the third member too much, but they've got two of them, and they're in a good position to take us on a journey to a big deal match between them. Javier emailed again and added this. Sheamus and Drew reconnected at the end of 2020 and reminisced about knowing each other forever, establishing them as former best friends. Sheamus was the one who gave Drew the kilt and sword when he came back from a trip to the UK. Drew's mother was like a mother to Sheamus. Sheamus eventually turned on Drew, and they feuded for 2021, and they split at the end of 2021 and rekindled things mid-2022. So that's the timeline. So, you know, at least they had established, and I knew they had, not to the degree of detail Javier just reminded me of, that they had established that they had been friends. But the type of brutality they had with each other in the ring to go right from that to best man at the wedding is quite the forgiveness. But the dynamic between them does have history, and it has been acknowledged on TV. And I like when WWE, you know, it applies to the Seth Roman thing too. I like when history is acknowledged and they build the next chapter and storylines and feuds around that.
Yeah, I hope if they ever feud again, Drew blames Sheamus for giving him that sword and derailing his entire career, because that's been a huge albatross around his neck for years now.
Oh, man. Yes. Briar emailed about from Council Grove, Kansas, emailed about Bray Wyatt. I mean, so what did you think of the Wyatt Insect video popping up on the screen at random times? For example, during the Ricochet entrance when Michael Cole and Wade Barrett were hyping the World Cup. Do you find it annoying or not really? I'm just not sure what to make of it at this point, because I agree with you. I mean, I don't know if Uncle Howdy's going to turn out to be somebody, if there's going to be other people involved in the Bray group, if so, when, are they with him, are they against him? There's a lot of questions, and who's causing, or what are we supposed to think of the video interruptions? Is there a pattern where it hints that he's about to show up? Is that maybe what it's now turned into? Because that was the case last week with LA Knight.
Yeah, we've seen it a couple of times when Alexa Bliss has been on screen too. I'm still uncertain about the future of it. You know, are they implying that Uncle Howdy is another person who is this subversive force in Bray Wyatt's life and who, you know, may be, trying to bring back the old him, so to speak, through his actions or manipulations or whatever the case is? Or are we witnessing, like I said earlier, some kind of dissociative identity situation where, you know, you have multiple people living inside of Bray Wyatt and he's not always, you know, driving the car, so to speak. And so I don't know what direction they're going to go with it. I'm at least intrigued by it. It's one of those things where I would almost prefer that it be some sort of dissociative mental condition rather than something supernatural again, because they always bungle the execution of those things. I am intrigued, and they have at least piqued my interest with the way that it's been presented. I have far more confidence in the direction of this than I ever did in The Fiend, in that whole situation. So I'm at least, you know, when he's on screen, I think he's compelling. And I think that's the best thing that I can say about him right now.
Another email here from John Gallagher, not J-O-N for the Wrestling Forum days, but J-O-H-N. He says, I know we aren't even at Survivor Series yet, but my question has to do with the plans for early 2023. What are your thoughts on the Royal Rumble this year? We are currently speeding toward the end of 2022, and of course, the first of our New Year premium live events will be the Royal Rumble, now that day one has been scrapped. Routinely, the winner of the Rumble gets to headline WrestleMania. The problem this year, though, is the looming potential for Rock and Roman to headline one of the nights. Where does that leave us for the Rumble this year and the impact the winner has on the card for WrestleMania if that happens? Remembering last year's Rumble and shuddering when I remember that it was potentially one of the worst Rumbles in history, there is a need for WWE to deliver a great event to make us forget about the shambles that was last year's event. So what do you do this year? My theory is that with a roller coaster ascent for Sami Zayn, we have a Zayn win through some twist of fate, and this sets up the story leading into WrestleMania, and we forget about the Rock Reigns match because, let's be honest, if that match happens, it doesn't need to be for a belt. The ending of night one is we have Zayn win the gold, leave the ring, and when Reigns is feeling the loss, we hear the Rock's music, and he comes out to challenge Reigns to a match at night two, but not the main event. This is the only potential for a feel-good ending to a great storyline and the culmination of the rocket that is strapped to Sammy's back. Personally, this would be my ideal scenario. The other option is we're going towards a Reigns-Rock main event, and then we have Rock enter the Rumble as a mystery contender, win, and then challenge Reigns. The runner-up prize would then unfortunately go to Zayn, and we see him team with Owens to dethrone the Usos for the tag titles at WrestleMania. Again, I'd love to see this, but it doesn't fill that hole that would be left in a potential Sammy win at Mania by the honorary Us. What do you think? Thanks for the dedication to delivering a must-hear world of podcasts. Thank you, John. So this is a good lead-in, too, not only to the specifics, but just some talk about Sammy tonight and how his reactions to, you know, just his ring entrance and his interactions backstage with Jay in particular getting heated, and then Jimmy telling Sammy to calm down and giving Solo a little arm massage and Solo not reacting at all. So if there's anything you want to pluck out of Sammy's night, including stuff with Butch, talk about that, and then broaden it out to what John brought up about the Rumble and the scenarios, because I think the all eyes will be on Sammy come Rumble time, and people will be wanting him to have some sort of a special moment at the Rumble, Jake.
Yeah, I think the Rumble is going to be the moment where he sort of gets jumped out of the gang, so to speak. I think it makes sense to me that Sammy is going to be the guy that ends up costing them the, you know, War Games in some way, shape, or form. And that just ratchets up the tension even further, you know, heading into the Royal Rumble. And, you know, he's put in a, you know, behind the eight ball to redeem himself in some way. And he just can't do it. You know, I as much as I would think, oh, yes, the Sammy, you know, winning the Royal Rumble and going on to, you know, challenge Roman at WrestleMania, that's a, you know, that's a potentially really interesting story given how successful the Bloodline has been on television. But I don't know if it's, you know, if it's one of those marquee matches that is going to drive viewership. And I think WrestleMania is such a mainstream focused event that I think they would rather have, certainly they'd rather have The Rock, but if they can't, I think they would go with one of their other marquee performers in that slot. But I could be barking up the wrong tree, but I much rather like the idea of Owens and Zayn getting back on the same page and challenging the Usos, because I think that's really been the core of Sammy's interaction with the Bloodline. It's been with Jay and Jimmy and their different reactions to him, and Roman has been sort of some of the gatekeeper of those things, making the final decision about Sammy's admittance into the Bloodline and making him the honorary Oos. But he hasn't really been the core of Sammy's story. And so I'd much rather see them go after the Usos personally.
I think that match happening is safer, and you can build longer term towards a singles match. The idea of Reigns holding the title for years longer does not bother me that much. If Reigns works a semi-regular schedule, even if he's not around full-time, and he holds on to both belts, if they don't split him up again, I mean, we've got to see what Paul Levesque decides as far as that goes. Because title reigns used to be so long. You know what I mean? That it would not be unusual for someone to hold the title for years. That was sort of the standard for so many world title runs decades ago. And it does feel special. And the fact that they're able to cash in the Usos' New Day situation with their respective long title reigns and turn it into a SmackDown main event that did pretty well in the ratings was nice. You know, they've got 52 weeks to fill a year, and that wasn't a match I think you could build a pay-per-view around. I mean, I guess you could have with the stipulation and the hype as a supporting match, but made for a good draw for SmackDown. Just every title defense with Reigns starts to feel more like Brock Lesnar's streak. You know, not that it's just only once a year he defends a title, but there's so much more on the line when a champion is so dominant and holds it for so long. I'd want Sammy to face Roman. I wouldn't be upset if Sammy beat Roman and had a title run if it seemed like the fans would be really into it. But I'm also not sure that I would ultimately vote for it if the other option isn't him losing to someone else, but rather him just holding it longer.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I guess it really depends on what Roman's plans are. You know, how long does he plan on, you know, being around even part-time? You know, is he pursuing ventures outside of professional wrestling? And I really can't answer that. And, you know, he hasn't really mentioned it in any public interviews either. But I have to believe that, if they can't really elevate an opponent to the point where it feels like moving the title away from Roman will benefit the company, then why would you go out of your way to do it just to have a title change at WrestleMania or something? I think Roman has been a good driver of business, and so has the Bloodline in general, that breaking that up or derailing it by having both the Usos and Roman lose their championships, unless you have a really strong and compelling story in mind, maybe you just don't pull the trigger on it. There might be some people who are upset about that, but I think the eventual payoff of, you know, putting the right challenger on the rails and putting them on the path to, you know, to derail Roman, it should feel like a watershed moment for WWE where you have the next big star taking that title from Roman Reigns.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. All right. Somebody dropped off. We had another caller, but we don't have them. So now's a good time. If you are listening to us live and you want to sneak in before we wrap up here, give us a call. 347-215-8558. And when you call, push one on your keypad, and that'll flag you on the switchboard. The email, too, is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Okay, so a couple other things from SmackDown that I want to bring up, and that is just the World Cup tournament and how you think they're doing with it. Mustafa Ali and Ricochet, I thought, told a really nice kind of one-night story built upon what happened, especially last week, that you wouldn't expect Ricochet and Ali to be fighting with anything at stake, but there was something at stake here because it was the tournament. And Ali was fighting through with broken ribs, so when or injured ribs, I should say. So when he was hurt, it was when he lost, it was because he came into the match with an injury, partially so. You know, they protected him somewhat. I look at Ricochet and Mustafa as pretty equal on the roster. I don't think tons of people are excited to see necessarily either of them challenge for the IC title because I don't think there's a sense that they're credible threats to win. But they had a good match. I thought, you know, for 11 minutes with a commercial break in the middle, I thought they did a nice job with their spots, made them look good, unlike Roman Reigns' two Superman punches, which looked awful. Not sure what was up with those tonight. Did you pick up on that, Jake?
Yeah, a lot of daylight there. Superman
on both of them, yes.
Yeah, looked pretty rough. But I would agree on Ali and Ricochet. They had a very strong match, you know, one of the better TV matches this week. And I wouldn't have expected them to advance too much further in the tournament. I did like the fact that that Ricochet got to needle Braun Strowman over his poorly phrased and worded tweets on about flippy folks or whatever the terminology was and how tone deaf that all came across. And so I don't think there's really any doubt about which direction they're going with the finish of that match. But I think they gave people a reason to get behind Mustafa Ali, you know, showing a lot of toughness despite being really hurt. And they did a nice job of establishing why that was the case with some highlights from Raw with his match with Bobby Lashley. And, and Ricochet, you know, showed some empathy and compassion by telling him that he didn't need to do this. You know, he could have forfeited and not suffered further punishment. And you know, Ali, of course, you know, being the tough guy, wanted to go through with it anyway. And so, yeah, I mean, a good, you know, not overly complicated, but well-told one-night story that that moved Ricochet forward and gave people a reason to get behind Mustafa Ali as, you know, maybe not immediately, but a guy in the future who, you know, who can build towards something.
Yes. Yep. I like the sportsmanship between them. I just think it's good to have sort of character building moments for babyfaces where they kind of do the right thing and they act like decent people. And there's not a swerve. It's not a heel turn. It's because so many just kind gestures are just done as a setup for a turn. And it's nice just to have a kind gesture, you know, and Ricochet asking fans to cheer Ali as he was helping him to the back. I think makes people like Ricochet more. He's ambitious. He's happy he won, but he's not rubbing it in. And he understands, you know, Ali is a respectable opponent who put up a good fight. We haven't talked about Karrion Kross and Madcap Moss yet. Moss losing pretty decisively to Karrion Kross in just 4 minutes. So they're not protecting him for a mega push at this point. It would not seem. It'd be a weird way to go about it. But they did further develop the romance, the budding romance with Emma. Your thoughts on what they're doing there?
Well, you know, much like with the sportsmanship and the empathy shown between Ricochet and Mustafa Ali, I think humanizing Madcap Moss a little bit with an on-screen relationship is a good choice, you know, and maybe he'll eventually drop the Madcap name as well and just start going by Riddick Moss. I think that would be perfectly fine. And they can make him seem a little bit more multi-dimensional because he does seem very one note as he's currently presented. And you know, Emma being a catalyst for, you know, change in him, maybe that'll also benefit her, you know, give her a little bit more humanity and personality, and then, you know, that could kickstart something for her if fans get behind her in the women's division. So I think it's a win-win, you know, particularly considering they, you know, they are a real-life couple and potentially have some on-screen chemistry together.
Yeah, I like it too. I think Moss needs something. Hopefully one of her first requests is, hey, Madcap, can we come up with a different first name? I don't want to introduce you as Madcap to my friends if we start dating. And maybe just Riddick would work just fine. How you doing on the Karrion Kross journey? And even I like the backstage tease later where the Usos are like, hey, are you the fifth guy? And he's like, no, I'm going to do things on my own. When I go to Roman, it's going to be on my terms. It wasn't heelish. It wasn't babyface. It was just sort of a badass. He's defined as a heel based on his other actions. But in this case, he defined himself as a loner. And I like that. I was never into the idea of Kross being part of like the Bray Wyatt family. If that got brought back together, he seems like someone who he and Charlotte are going to just kind of do their own thing. And I like that the Usos were up, as they hinted at in the locker room segment, I'll try to figure out who that person was and investigating a little bit. I think it made the payoff later feel more suspenseful, or like more of a payoff of something that they were genuinely curious about.
Yeah, it's not clicking with me personally with Kross. I still think his character is a bit ill-defined. You know, they have Michael Cole talking about Scarlett being his oracle, and you know, there's still that sort of vaguely mystical supernatural element that they haven't bothered to really expand upon, or you know, really what his purpose or goals are. You know, he's a lot like the parts of Bray Wyatt that I haven't liked in the past, where it's just a lot of gibberish and nonsense about, you know, whether it's manipulating space time or you know, using tarot cards to see the future, or it doesn't really jive with what I enjoy about professional wrestling. And on top of that, I don't think he's been particularly impressive in the ring. You know, if I had to pick somebody who stood out positively in his match tonight, it was Madcap Moss, who actually lived up to Emma's proclamation that he's far more athletic than Karrion Kross, because Kross looked sluggish and his offense didn't look great. You know, and he you know, he got the win with the choke, but I didn't think he had the best performance in that match. So call me a hater or whatever, but I am down on the Karrion Kross experience so far in his return to the main roster. I have not particularly enjoyed his character or his matches thus far.
Yeah, I think I started at a lower place than you. We might, you know, I'm not sure if I've passed how you feel about him, like, and I'm higher on him probably than you are right now, but I not by much, because I'm nodding along to your reservations and concerns and just pointing out his shortcomings. But he's not as, I don't know, I don't know if it's the hair or the fact that he just isn't doing those stupid haunted house faces, the cartoonish overt bad acting stuff. I think he just feels more grounded. He comes across now as the guy that you'd see, you know, eating at the restaurant, being a jerk to the server or turning away autographs. Like it feels like the character he's playing on TV transfers outside the realm of the red light of the camera being on. And it didn't to me before. And that kind of ruined it for me. I felt like it was just a bad, you know, haunted house monster, meanie cosplay gimmick. And this just feels more sinister and realistic to me. Still got shortcomings in the ring. They didn't give him and Moss a long time to show off, but I thought it was solid while it lasted. It wasn't an embarrassment.
No, not embarrassing. There was, much like with Reigns and the Superman punches, there was just a lot of daylight in a lot of his strikes that match. And then he, you know, he picked up Moss for a suplex, and it looked like it was kind of a struggle. And so it didn't come across as immediately impressive. But I think the biggest issue for me isn't so much the ring work as the character work. And it's really just the supernatural elements. It's like, you know, If you sat down and watched Twin Peaks for the first time and you had no idea what you were in for and you just thought it was a procedural police drama, and then suddenly there's like a bunch of like supernatural things and you're like, you lost me here, you know, and that's kind of what I feel about Kross at times. If he was doing what you just described as, you know, as being, you know, this sort of asshole who treats servers poorly and bullies people for no reason, I think that would be a much more effective character than what they portrayed him as thus far.
Yeah, fair enough. is there anything else from SmackDown that you want to bring up that we haven't covered? I think we've actually pretty efficiently covered a lot here.
I think we got through pretty much the entire show there. So no, nothing jumps to mind.
Yeah. All right. Well, no harm in wrapping up a little sooner than expected. I don't think anybody else gave us a call here. Nope. So last call, if anyone pushes one, we'll take your call here at the last second. But a bunch of people have called in, but haven't pushed one. So, all right. So yeah, we'll just take that as a wrap. I mean, it was enough happened on the show to, I think, make it a worthwhile watch with some good wrestling and some storyline advancement, but not blockbuster. And yeah, like you said, I think we covered everything. Jake, appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Check out Jake's work over at ProWrestling.net. Of course, check out our website, pwtorch.com. And we'll talk to you all next time.